So for the last two Sundays, we've been looking at the Ten Commandments. And we covered the first four last Sunday. Can anyone tell us what those first four are concerned with?
How to relate to God.
Very good. Exactly right. How to relate to God. Each of them, in the way they're worded, reveals something about God's nature and character that was unique from other so-called gods of the day. And they're each designed to help people know how to honor God. And they're also basically all prohibitions against certain activities. The one possible exception to that would be honor the Sabbath. But even in that command, there was a don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. That was an addendum to that. So verse 12, which is where we left off last Sunday, starts the list of commands that ensure healthy relations between people. It's followed by the commands not to kill, commit adultery, steal, lie, or covet. Now those last five commands are prohibitions against activities that are destructive to relationships between people. Most of the problems that we face as a society fit under one of those broad headings. And when Jesus came on the scene, he took those commands and he expanded on them to demonstrate that it's not just the physical act that's a problem, it's also the heart and the motive behind it. Though that being said, it is difficult for society to judge. In fact, it was impossible for society to judge the motives behind those things, which is what society is trying to do now, is figure out how can we punish motives. Well, you can't. That's God's department. All man can do is punish the actual actions. But, at any rate, Jesus raised the bar. His explanation raised that bar to unattainable levels. People who may have thought that, well, like many do today, even when Jesus' day, people might have thought, well, I've never killed anyone. I've never robbed a bank. I've never slept with my neighbor's wife. I'm okay. And Jesus said, well, you can think again. Because guess what? Your heart is the issue. And your heart is evil. And we'll probably dig into that more next Sunday. We see that in the first four commands, they contain prohibitions on how to relate to God. Prohibitions that affect our relationship with God. These last four are how the prohibitions that last five, sorry, are prohibitions affecting our relationship with man. And right in the middle of these, verse 12, the fifth commandment, is this one that's unique. It was unique, certainly in the culture amongst whom the Israelites lived, and it was unique to the list of Ten Commandments. Verse 12, honor your father and mother that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. There's no prohibition given here. That makes it unique. Here we are in the middle of the Ten Commandments. Is this one that is a command to do something as opposed to not to do something? As a part of God's covenant, God promised the Israelites, that if they would honor their father and mother, He would prolong their days as a nation in their land. It's a very special command, which is why it's going to be the sole focus of today's message. And the other reason it's going to be the sole focus of today's message is because today also just happens to be Father's Day. A day that each year our country sets aside to honor fathers in particular. Moms, you already had your day. So today is Father's Day. Obviously, this passage is talking about more than just one day. It's talking about a lifestyle. It's a lifelong commitment as well. And it's an attitude reflected in action. Now it's good to set aside, I think, a day each year as a reminder to honor fathers and mothers for their contribution to the lives of their children. But that alone does not fulfill the requirements of this command. So the question that I have is, why did this particular thing make it to the list of 10 essential commandments? I can see why a society needs to know, don't kill, don't commit adultery, don't steal, don't lie, don't covet, those types of things. Your society breaks down if you allow those types of things. Chaos reigns. I can understand why you need those things, but why this one? Why honor your father and mother? Why is that essential to the functioning, in this case, of a nation, because that's what God was doing? Why is that essential to the functioning of a nation? I think one thing here is that God instituted the family. We see this in the verses I have on the screen in Genesis. The basic building block of society is the family. God created man in His image, and then formed woman from the rib of Adam, that first man. And He gave them the command to be fruitful and to multiply. And then He entrusted to them the responsibility of training their descendants up. Thus, honoring parents from the very beginning until the end of life bridges the first four commands that teach us how to relate to God and honor God, and the final five that teach us how to relate to other people. It starts at home in the family. We learn respect for authority in general most effectively when we're expected to show it to our parents from their very first days. Parents, by design, model for children the role of God's ultimate authority. Though no parent models that perfectly, the role of authority as God, and some model quite the opposite, in fact, but it doesn't change the command to honor parents. There are many children today who perhaps need to be rescued from homes and situations where parents have been systematically neglecting, abusing, or otherwise harming them. These are destructive to children on numerous levels, including oftentimes that of their understanding. It demolishes their view of God. So often parents who've been raised in abusive homes, they just can't wrap their minds around the idea of God, especially as a father. And so I acknowledge that. And I think in extreme cases, rescue from those situations could be in the form of legal action. But sometimes it may just be in the form of providing respite for some children when it lies within your ability to do so. And church activities oftentimes provide that. It does. And I think those who work with kids know that. But I think as a church, we need to recognize that as well. That children's programs, whether it's Awana's or Kids Club or youth group or whatever other programs a church might have, are oftentimes the respite that kids are getting from bad situations at home. And that's a great ministry for churches to have and for those who are involved in those. Children honoring parents in those situations can be tricky. I don't want to sidestep that issue because it's a serious and prevalent issue faced by many. And it has been. It's not something new to society or to mankind. It's been going on since the beginning of time. I'm going to limit the teaching on this, though, this morning to only acknowledging that it is an issue, and it's one which the Bible addresses. So I'm not going to speak to it much this morning except to say that it falls on vigilant adults to intervene on behalf of abused children. Children aren't usually in a position to discern what constitutes abuse because I think properly administered discipline is not enjoyable and can be mistaken as abuse by children. That means kids aren't necessarily the best judges of what abuse is and is not. At the same time, abusive behavior in its many forms can be, and usually is, labeled as discipline, making the distinction impossible, I think, for children to make. Cries for help from children, thus, must be taken very seriously by adults. And these are issues that we can't ignore. Having said that, parents have a heavy responsibility to lovingly and faithfully rear children, and the church bears a responsibility to equip, help, and encourage parents in this God-given task. Parenting is hard. What an awesome responsibility God gives us to rear children or a child in our home. Many of you have done that or are doing that. That is the biggest thing in the world. I think the biggest ministry that you have, that we have, is to raise up a child in our home. It trumps pastoring a church, by the way. I have far more impact on my four kids in the home than I'll ever have on you guys. You guys have far more impact in your homes than have, because many of you are already done with that. But you've had far more impact in your homes than you can ever have anywhere else. What happens in the home is the most important thing. We have the opportunity as parents to pour into and shape the life of a child. Not all parents see it this way. And often those who do don't treat it as such. I'm very thankful for parents who embraced that role throughout my life from the day I was born. Before that, actually. I was the first one, but they had made a decision long before I was born that that's what they were going to do. Another reason this command to honor parents makes it to the top 10 list, if you will, the 10 commandments, is because in it we see God's nature is reflected. Now, that being said, I have to qualify that. It's a very incomplete form. The family, mother, father, child, or children, has many elements that remind us of God and how He relates to people. Honoring parents, then, becomes a way to honor God. Now, one way that the mother-father relationship, mothers and fathers, I think, reflect the nature of God, again, it's a shadow, okay? I don't want to make too close of a parallel here, but mothers and fathers have the ability to procreate. Create life. Now, think about that. How often do we look for attributes of kids in their parents? We do. We look at the kids and we look at the parents and we see how that's reflected. And while this is similar to God's creative ability, it's by no means to be equated to it. In the first place, animals also have the ability to procreate. But secondly, God's creative activity in this area includes the ability to design with purpose and plan. So when He creates you and me, He's got a purpose and a plan. He already knows the end. Now when parents do that, they might have a purpose and a plan, but ultimately it falls under God's authority. And they have much less control than they might like to think. And so there's a certain amount of parallel, enough to say that bringing new life into the world is at least a God-given ability. In this regard, I think there's a reason to honor the ones who God enabled to bring us into the world, even if they failed in every other way. We also see that mother and father have authority through love. Even those who don't acknowledge God would have to admit that a child's mother and father have some level of authority for at least the child's formative years. And those of us who do recognize God's role in life understand that parents are given authority from God. And in case you aren't sure why, I've supplied a list of verses on your outline. And we're going to breeze through them quickly right now. as we consider, first of all, the biblical basis for the authority that a mother and father have as they rear children. We'll start with one from the New Testament, Hebrews 13:17. Now, I chose this verse with a bit of hesitation, because this verse speaks generally to the leaders of the church, but applies, I think, equally to parents who have the very same responsibility described here. It's on the screen behind me, but I'll read it for you. Obey your leaders and submit to them, for they are keeping watch over your souls as those who will have to give an account. Let them do this with joy and not with groaning, for that would be of no advantage to you. Again, I use this verse with hesitation because it's speaking to church leaders, speaking about church leadership. But parents are leaders, and parents will have to give an account before God of how they perform their duties. Are you listening, parents? We will stand before God, just like church leaders, and give an account of how we performed our duties. We better not shirk those duties. We better take them seriously. Secondly, or it also then becomes, it's an admonishment to parents. I think we can safely use this verse as an admonishment to parents and to children. Now, if we turn back to the Old Testament, we find that the Proverbs are full of instructions regarding parenting that affirm the role and authority of parents. Now, this is time for the kids to listen up. Are all the kids listening? Your parents have authority, and here's why. Proverbs 6:20 and 21. My son, keep your father's commandment and forsake not your mother's teaching. Bind them on your heart always. Tie them around your neck. Mom and dad have authority. Listen to them. And remember what they say to you, what they tell you, the instructions they give you. Bind them, it says, on your hearts. Tie them around your neck. Don't lose track of them. Or how about this one, Proverbs 22:6. Now this is to the parents. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. We love that verse. I think especially as your children get older, oftentimes you hear this most often, I think, when parents are struggling with children who have gone astray. It's encouragement. We've done our best when they're younger, now they're older, and they'll eventually turn back to it. And I'm not convinced that this is a promise, not to disappoint you, but I'm not convinced of that. I think the focus here is on the train up a child in the way he should go. That's the focus. That's the focus. That's our responsibility. When they're old, if they turn from it, that's their responsibility. But when they're young, it is my responsibility as a parent to train up my children in the way they should go. They walk away from when they're old, that's their business. It'll break my heart, as I know it has many of yours. But it's my responsibility to train them up. Train up. It's defined in the Hebrew lexicon as to train, to dedicate, or to inaugurate. Inaugurate. When we think of presidents, we think of inaugurate. But I like this word. It's very helpful. Because inaugurate means to begin or to introduce. So parents are given the responsibility to introduce children to the way they should behave and live. Your parents, given the responsibility of training you up, she is introducing you to how to behave. Many of you have already done that. Some of you are doing it again. This is our responsibility as parents, to teach them what they don't know. They don't know how to behave in church until they're taught. They don't know how to behave in school until they're taught. They don't know how to behave towards their siblings until they're taught. We, as parents, are given that responsibility to train them up, to inaugurate them, to introduce them to these concepts that they don't know. Left to our own desires as children, we would be monsters. Many are, because that's exactly what they had. Part of that training is correction and discipline. And we see that certainly as God, oftentimes He calls Israel His children. And God modeled for us in His relationship with His children Israel, modeled the idea of discipline and correction. And we'll see that as we continue through the book of Exodus, even. So too, parents, especially fathers, in a very real way, stand in the place of God when they bring about discipline and love. Are you listening, kids? Parents, stand in the place of God when we bring discipline on you. Because, by the way, we are going to stand before God and give an account of what we did with you. Now let's shift our attention to the biblical pattern for exercising authority, parental authority. Proverbs 13:24, whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is diligent to discipline him. Now, don't miss the role of love in this admonition. The rod of correction must be used in love. This, of course, will limit both the times when the rod is used and the way in which it is used. A loving father or mother will not bring intentional physical harm to a child in the name of discipline. You might want to write that one down. I'll repeat it for you. A loving father or mother will not bring intentional physical harm to a child in the name of discipline. That's not discipline, that's abuse. In case you weren't clear on that, that is abuse. That doesn't mean, however, that the rod of correction or the wooden spanking spoon in our house should be put away as though it's an outdated mode of discipline. It has its place, especially when a child is younger, and at times even when a child is older. Let's move on to Proverbs 19:18. Discipline your son, for there is hope. Do not set your heart on putting him to death. Listen, let's read that one again. Discipline your son, for there's hope. Do not set your heart on putting him to death. You could almost... What does that second part have to do with anything? Why is that there? I think it's because discipline in anger is a dangerous thing. The instruction to discipline is seasoned with the implication to refrain from it when you feel like you could kill something. Don't discipline in anger. Wait until you cool off. Now we'll consider three more Proverbs briefly. Proverbs 22:15. Folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction will drive it far from him. I think I've quoted that to my kids before as I've used the rod of correction on them. I'm going to drive this folly far from you. Chapter 23, verse 13. Do not hold back discipline from a child. Although you strike him with the rod, he will not die. Again, seasoned with love. 29:17, correct your son, and he will give you comfort. He will also delight your soul. I think these last three Proverbs admonish parents to use balanced discipline in rearing children. And it's a concept clarified in the New Testament, Ephesians 6, chapter 4. Fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Now it's true that fathers are from time to time guilty of provoking children to anger unnecessarily. But it should not be something that marks a regular pattern of behavior. The solution is to bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Now, fathers have had a tendency to hand that responsibility off to moms. She's better at it, they often say. That's a cop-out. Men, as leaders of the home, are to be the spiritual leaders in what we say, in the words of instruction, and also in how we live our lives. The two have got to match up. Because you know what? Kids know when the two don't match up. And when they see hypocrisy, they will run as far away from Christianity as they can possibly get. Because they've seen the hypocrisy at home. Many are the wounded today who have rejected Christianity because they saw the hypocrisy at home. Dad or mom would say one thing, demand one thing of them, and live a completely different way themselves. And they said, "This is a bunch of baloney. I want no part of this." Mothers do play a vital role in this spiritual leadership at the home, but it is alongside a husband and a father who desires to bring children up in the ways of the Lord. Now, he may not feel like he can do the best job, but it's a role God has given the father that the father must not neglect or delegate away. Now, I can say that I have a father who modeled this well for me. Actually, both my parents modeled it well for us kids, what it looks like to be parents striving to put the Lord first in their lives by rearing children with a foremost concern for our spiritual well-being as Christians. I have parents worthy of the honor the fifth commandment compels me to give them. But regardless of their merit for this honor, I am still compelled to honor my parents. Now, I no longer live under the rules or authority of their home, but I give them the honor they deserve. So I look up this word honor. And it means to prize highly. It's used sometimes in that way. Proverbs 4:8, we see that prizing wisdom highly. That's the idea of honor. It can also mean to care for. We see that in Psalm 91:9-15. And it can also mean to show respect for. This is the idea of honor, that we are to show our parents. And it's not something that happens only when we're children living in their homes. Many of you either are, right now, or have in the past, cared for your aging parents. Some of you are going to be doing that in your future, right? You care about your parents, and you're going to be involved. And if you have done that, the command to honor parents extends beyond the years during which we live in their homes. It's expressed differently at different times, but it is to be expressed. So it is today that we honor fathers. They are imperfect representations of God the Father. Some are more imperfect than others. Some are so imperfect that their children struggle with the concept of God as loving Father. Still, they are the men God used to make us. If not morally or in other such ways, as my own father did well, they at least had a critical role in our physical life. We would not exist without our fathers. In case you didn't realize that, now you do. You need a father and a mother. To physically exist, you need both. I'm going to close this morning by honoring the fathers who've made the effort to be here this morning. I'm going to ask anyone in here who is a father, stand right now. I'm not going to make you come to the front and embarrass you, but I am going to ask you to stand. fathers need prayer. Most of the fathers I'm looking at here have already done their work as fathers in terms of rearing young children. But your work continues, and you continue to be honored, hopefully, by your children. But we as a church want to honor you right now. And we're going to close this morning in prayer for these fathers. And I'm going to ask that all of you who are here, mothers and children and others, who pray with me for these men. Lord, I thank you for these men that you have in this church this morning who have made the effort to be here. Lord, all the men who are standing before me this morning no longer have children at home, but they remain fathers. They continue to have an impact in the lives of their children and stepchildren, and now in many cases their grandchildren, and perhaps even great-grandchildren. And Lord, I pray for these men that you would continue to give them the grace to be models of what it is to follow you. And Lord, I thank you for the honor of being a father. And I pray that we as men who've already had that privilege will continue to be models. And Lord, for the young men in this room who are not yet fathers, Lord, I pray that you would work in their lives, Lord, and prepare them for that role in the day that they may have that position. Lord, that the men and boys in this room could be godly examples of what it is to be a man who follows you and loves you and puts you first in our lives. Because, Lord, we love you. And you are worth it. In Jesus' name, amen.